Is this okay? One, two, three.
That works.
Okay.
You're listening to EAA Radio. Joining me today is Alan Klattmeyer from Kestrel Aircraft. And that's a new title for you. New this year at the 2010 Oshkosh Convention. Actually, new was about last week was the big announcement.
Yeah, we made the announcement that we were putting together Kestrel Aircraft Corporation as an outgrowth of what was Farnborough Aircraft to do the Kestrel turboprop last Friday. So, yeah, it's just about a week.
Outstanding. And now the airplane is, tell us a little bit about the airplane. It's a single engine turboprop. How many seats?
Yeah, I suppose the first, you know, kind of differentiating characteristics are single engine turboprop, composite airplane, 6 to 8 seats, pretty nice aerodynamics, both in terms of drag and aesthetically. So it's a pretty modern looking airplane. It actually, though, has been something that Farnborough has been working on for about 10 years, so there's quite a lot of engineering that's gone into it, although there's still more to do before certification, and the goal is certified production airplane.
Certified production airplane, so that would be the next question. Is it a kit? Is it it's the famous Klattmeyer two-piece kit, the key in the airplane?
Yeah, this is the key in the airplane. It's definitely not a kit. It's a pretty complex airplane to build, and we think it fits a pretty interesting market niche, so as a production airplane, we think it'll work out pretty well.
Now, one of the things that people in the industry have been kind of leaning towards is turbine engines, Jet A. You see that as kind of the future of the general aviation fleet being Jet A burning versus...
Yeah, great question, actually. And I've been pushing on, obviously, the single engine jet for a while, and now we're doing a turboprop, so a lot of it might look that way. But no, I'm actually pretty optimistic about the future of avgas.
Getting interrupted by the private Harrier as it's flying by the studio here.
And it'll get really loud when he starts to hover. No, as I said, I really think that there's a 100-octane unleaded solution. I've spent the last several months looking at the issue and working with a couple of different sides of it. We've got a set of concerns. I'm not satisfied that the industry and the FAA is really pushing on this as aggressively as they need to, but obviously I would come from the little bit more entrepreneurial view of this, and I think what we need to be doing is encouraging individual companies to go out and find the solution. That includes groups like GAMI that is working on it, all the different varieties. While at Cirrus, we had looked at a lot of different jet fuel, or I should say avgas alternatives, and that included the SMA diesel, the Rotax automotive fuel V6 liquid-cooled engine, the Thieler diesel, and they all have interesting little niches, but if we can find the right solution for an unleaded 100-octane fuel, that's what solves the problem for everybody.
Well, and there's a ton of airplanes that are already in the field that are using 100 low lead, and so there needs to be some sort of a solution to keep those. And you're, right. Besides being an aviation entrepreneur, you're also a home builder, an antiquer, and did you get the chipmunk down?
The chipmunk is here, yes, and thank you, Carol, for getting it down here. Yeah, I finally got my chipmunk to Oshkosh, and every year for the last 4 or 5 years I've been hoping it would be here, and it now finally is.
Now, they're having an anniversary celebration this year with the... There's a big group of chipmunks.
There's a big group here, but it actually isn't a particular anniversary this year.
Oh, it's not
the
50th or anything
like
that?
No, the chipmunk was designed right after World War II as a replacement for the Tiger Moth by de Havilland Canada, and now it's about to get really loud.
Yeah, speaking of burning jet fuel, the private Harrier's going on here. We can pause real quick here. All right, the Harrier has throttled back now so we can... hear ourselves think inside the studio here. We were talking about kind of the future of general aviation and the future of 100 low lead before we got interrupted by the Harrier.
Yeah, and they're actually pretty closely tied, at least in the beginning. I'm obviously very optimistic about the future of general aviation. I think that one of the problems we have in this industry is that we're always apologizing for general aviation. You know, we don't need to be apologizing. This is fantastic stuff. Whether it's the utility provided by the airplanes from a business use or the enjoyment that we get out of our antiques and our warbirds and our ultralights and our LSAs and our cool old classics, we got nothing to apologize for. This is a fantastic industry with huge, huge, huge benefits, which we all know for those of us that are involved. So why don't we go out and educate more people? Show them how great this is. Let's get more people involved in aviation. Now, having said that, we obviously have our threats. There's a lot of them. And the 100 octane is one of them. We need to make sure that we've got a good, secure future for the 100 octane engines that are in the fleet so that we keep the economic viability while we go educate the rest of the world about why they ought to get involved as well.
That's a good point. One of the big events of 2010 that kind of showed the value of general aviation was the Haiti airlift after the earthquake. I was involved with that as one of the flight coordinators, and we had airplanes from Super Cubs and Cirruses to Gulfstreams and Pilatuses and all of those kinds of airplanes, and we had more and more NGOs, non-government organizations and stuff that had never really considered general aviation as a solution to the problem. And in that situation, it was such an elegant solution that they were really, really impressed by that.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely, right? It was a wonderful demonstration of what we can do, including times that aren't quite so life-threateningly critical, but are still, whether it's medical or economic dislocations, hurricanes, whatever you've got, earthquakes in China, or just how do you get home to see your daughter's soccer game? It's general aviation.
Exactly.
We can solve your problem.
And I think that's, you hit the nail on the head as far as educating more people and getting more people involved in aviation and people realize that it's something that anybody can really get involved in if they have the interest and the desire to do that.
Yeah. So. And in fact, it's so broad. I mean, whether it's, an ultralight or an LSA or something like that, or find an old Cessna 170, 172 or something. There's a lot of different entry points. Learn to fly in a jet. I think that works as well. We need to demonstrate it to people. We need to stop being embarrassed about it. We need to show more people. This is darn cool stuff.
Exactly. Speaking of cool stuff, getting back to the Kestrel, the new airplane that you're involved with.
I agree. That's darn cool stuff, too.
I stopped over and looked at it, and for those of you listening on the convention grounds, the airplane is parked kind of just to the east of the control tower.
East of the control tower, north of Honda, just west of Piaggio and the Avante.
And the big flying magazine tent, it's kind of kitty-corner from that area. But it's a very pretty airplane. But one of the questions that I heard while I was over there is, you have kind of become synonymous with the airplane with the parachute. Even if people don't know the name Cirrus, they know it's the airplane with the parachute. Is that something that is going to carry over to the new airplane?
Yeah, and you're right. The Cirrus is often known as just the airplane with the parachute, even if they don't know the name. It's certainly something we're looking at. Unlike the Cirrus, it won't be a required piece of equipment for certification. But if we can make it an option, we're going to do that. We've had some very interesting discussions with BRS, Ballistic Recovery Systems, that did the Cirrus parachute. And I'm feeling pretty optimistic about it. It's a big, heavy airplane. It's a fast airplane. It's going to be, there's some new technology that we're going to have to work on to make it work.
You mentioned it's fast. Are you guys willing to talk performance numbers yet, or is it still too early in the airplane's development program?
It's at a peculiar spot in the airplane's development program. There's a prototype flying. There's a lot of engineering work done. There's some pretty clear performance for the existing prototype. Having said that, we're now backing away from all of that and saying, well, wait a minute, let's rethink some of these things. The world's changed a little bit. What are the right economics? What's the right size engine? Do we need that much horsepower? Because it's pretty overpowered. The performance is incredible. And I will often say that to people, and the first response always is, whoever heard of an airplane with too much power? And I say, okay, how about an airplane that's too expensive? You're right, that makes sense. All right, if a little less horsepower saves some money. But we'll also be looking at some other, features and specifications on the airplane. How much fuel can we get in it? What will the maximum range be? I can tell you that based upon the existing prototype, it'll carry a lot of weight. It'll fly really far, and it's a pretty darn fast airplane. I don't think that we'll end up at the 350 knots that the prototype will fly, because, again, I think it's unnecessary. But over 300 knots, well over 300 knots, yeah, it'll do that.
That sounds good. So the obviously, when you show up with a prototype, there's going to be, between now and the production, avionics changes, but is the basic airframe pretty much the same, or are you guys going to do... Is there a lot of changes involved?
Well, there are a lot of changes, and to some people they'll sound large, but but again, the Farnborough team has done a lot of work on this. We're going to straighten out the wing a little bit, which makes the spar lighter and less expensive to build, less complex. So there'll be some changes like that, which are about production and weight. There'll be some comfort changes and how you get in and out of the front seat and things like that. Obviously, from an avionics point of view, it'll end up having a very modern glass cockpit, which means a user-friendly, easy to reach, simple to understand view of what your airplane's doing.
That makes sense. Now, the original airplane that was here was developed over in the UK, and you guys are planning on producing it here in the U.S.
Most of the engineering, the original engineering was done in the UK. And I've got a chipmunk. I love Spitfire. I think UK engineering's come up with some pretty good stuff. Although I should admit that the chipmunk was designed in Canada.
That's true.
That was De Havilland, Canada. No, they've done a lot of good work. But yeah, the airplane will be built in the United States in Brunswick, Maine, which has been the home of the Brunswick Naval Air Station, which got BRAC listed in 2005. So the base
kind of
whatever
like
it was. Anyway, it's closing. So this is a chance to put some more jobs back into the economy.
Sounds good. Brunswick, Maine, it's kind of like Duluth with saltwater, huh? MiG-21 flying by the studio here. So, is there anything else that you want to talk about the airplane?
Well, I think that probably the one point that I think people need to think of is that airplanes have different niches, and that what I would like to do is see more people think about what it is they need out of an airplane. Are they looking for long range? Are they looking for high speed? Are they looking for short runways? Are they looking for lower cost? Are they looking for simpler operation? And no one airplane can do all of that. We think this fits a pretty neat niche, but I think that the single engine jets are going to do really well, and obviously I think there's a very bright future for piston engine aircraft because they are going to be the more efficient airplanes.
That's something that I've been involved with corporate aviation for most of my career, and one of the things that is a recurring theme is nothing's worse than someone buying the wrong airplane for their mission, and it's sort of like using a hammer to put in a screw. You're just using the wrong tool for the job, and I think that's the key, especially when someone's buying their first airplane or upgrading their airplane, to make sure that they're getting the right airplane to do the job. And
yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And the competitive side of the business has everyone trying to sell the customer the airplane that they've got. Well, we really need to make sure we're selling the customer the airplane that they need or want, so that we can get them the next time too. Keep people excited about the industry. Make sure that they're getting good utility out of it. And that's true in airplanes, it's true in motorcycles, it's true in all kinds of different things. You sell a customer something that they don't really need, it sits in the garage, it sits in the hangar, it sits out in the parking lot. We don't want to do that. Let's make sure that we grow this industry in a real responsible way.
Well, that's something that goes
way.
Back to what you mentioned earlier about getting more people interested in aviation and also keeping them interested in aviation. If they, you have a new airplane owner that they come to a show like AirVenture Oshkosh and they get really excited about owning an airplane, learning to fly, and
I'd like to have a DC-3 this year.
Yeah, that would be great. But you know, for someone that a DC-3 would be a great airplane, but not really the best for that first airplane to learn to fly in.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I suppose it could be done, but you're really kind of biting off more than you can chew there.
Yeah. Understand the mission. Get the right airplane.
So, what the mission for the Kestrel kind of a.
Well, one of the defining characteristics of that mission for the Kestrel would be the need to get in and out of shorter runways.
Okay.
Again, it'll carry a big load, it'll fly a long distance, it'll get in and out of short runways. If you don't need to get in and out of the short runways, then the turbofans, the jets, have some other advantages. For a lot of people, they just don't need to fly that far, and you're going to end up spending money for range that you don't use. You know, if you never fly further than 500 or 600 miles, costs a lot of money to have an airplane that'll fly 1,300 miles. You know, you don't really need that. And the same is true of payload. When we were working on the Cirrus jet, we had a lot of interesting conversations with people about payload. And clearly, as you spend more, you want to get more of those kinds of features. But you also want to really think about what your mission is. And we had a few customers that were very, very straightforward about it. You know, I will never fly with more than my wife and another couple. You know, 4 seats is enough. And others that recognize that they needed more. In the case of the Kestrel, we'll take 6 to 8 people and still fly them a very long distance.
Very good. The airplane will be single pilot certified, and it won't need a type rating because it's less than 12,500.
Right. The airplane is single pilot, definitely does not need a type rating, which the turbofans do, but I'm comfortable with the idea of getting type ratings for those people. In this case, you can be sure the airplane will be very easy to operate because, as I've said before, it's got to be easy enough for me. So it's going to be easy to operate.
Excellent. So, well, thank you much for joining us. And
thank you. I appreciate it. It's fun to talk to people about the airplane and important to talk to people about the industry.
Excellent. Thank you. Alan Klattmeyer from Kestrel Aircraft joining us at EAA Radio. And if you'd like to see the Kestrel up close and personal, here on Tower Road on the convention grounds, just east of the FAA Tower. You're listening to EAA Radio.